Welcome to the SB Live California podcast. Connor Morissette here with Lance Smith and Bodie DeSilva. Before we get going, I want to take a moment to tell you about something exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest California high school sports news, scores, videos, polls, photos, podcasts, player rankings, and much more. With the SB Live sports app, it is now even easier to follow your favorite team with real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more. The app delivers all the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's your number one source for California high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Lance Smith, Bodie DeSilva, and me. The SB Live sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. All right, gentlemen, we had a very eventful weekend in the last week with basketball wrapping up and then baseball onto the regional playoffs. Bodie, how are you doing? You holding up all right?
Yeah, good. We finished basketball. A lot of San Diego teams had success and got a couple more days of baseball.
Lance, how about you?
Things are good. I'm just looking forward to next season already, but trying to savor the last few moments of this one.
Yeah, for sure. So, Bodie, let's start in San Diego, where Etiwanda played Torrey Pines at Torrey Pines in that open division regional state championship game. And it looked like at first Etiwanda was running away with it, but Torrey Pines, like they've done all year, made it a game of it. And I mean, they ended up losing their first game of the year, but just to fight back, I was impressed with that. What were your takeaways from that game?
Yeah, in the first half, Etiwanda came out and against a team like Etiwanda that's so athletic, you got to figure out what you're going to let them have and what you're going to try and take away. And they were able to get a bunch of open threes, and the credit to them, they were knocking them down in the first half, whether it was seven or eight of them, and went into halftime with, I believe it was a 17-point lead, looked to be the super dominant team. And then Torrey Pines came out the second half and only allowed Etiwanda 6 points in the third quarter. They ended it on a 12-0 run, and that lead that was once 19 points got all the way down to a point with just over 3 minutes left, and a couple of rebounds got loose and Etiwanda was able to get them. Otherwise, maybe Torrey Pines would have had a shot for a lead, and even then still was able to drop a 3-pointer at the buzzer. Nick Herman slipped coming around the corner there as the clock expired, and Etiwanda grabbed the 3-point win.
And then in baseball, Eastlake, they were the 8 seed, right? And they go all the way to win the San Diego championship.
Yeah, there was a week or two there where it looked like they were going to slip into Division One. Did not end the league year very well. Lost their two games to Bonita Vista, lost to Montgomery, and made it in. And when you have the top player on the field, I guess you always have a chance. And the way they were able to get their pitching going in the double elimination format, they beat San Marcos, who was the top seed, 2 out of 3. They beat Sage Creek, another really good team, and just got it rolling. And by the time they made the championship, they were able to have their number one, Ray Cebulski, on the mound. And he's been in these environments so often. I talked to him after one of the San Marcos playoff games, and he just, with Eastlake and him being in the playoffs here for so long and playing these open division games, it was nothing new. And he came into this championship game and gave Grossmont, who is as good of a hitting team as we have down here, just such a hard time. And Eastlake was able to capitalize and get that 8-3 win and get Eastlake their third open division title in 5 years. So that's a really impressive stat.
Was Marcelo Mayer obviously a huge piece? He's going to be drafted probably 2 overall, it looks like, in the draft coming up. But was he a huge part of it as expected? I'm sure he had a huge tournament.
Yeah, the until yesterday in their regional playoff game, it had been over a month since he homered. And I know he's been frustrated with so many teams pitching around it, but I think especially in that championship game, like Grossmont, they with guys on base, they couldn't do it. So I think he had a single and a double in that game, and just showed his approach at the plate and being super patient. So when you got a guy like that in the lineup and anyone's on base, it just makes the opposing team's job so much more difficult.
Got it. And then we need to touch on that unfortunate incident where Coronado played Orange Glen and beat them, and then there was the whole tortilla toss situation. If people aren't familiar with that, it's been all over the news. You can look it up, but essentially Coronado won, and then their players were on video throwing tortillas at Orange Glen, which is a predominantly Latino school. And last night at the Coronado Unified School District, I think it's called, their board meeting, they ended up firing the coach. And Bodie, you wrote a story about that. So just take the pulse of that area right now and what's going on down there. It's a very sad and unfortunate event that unfolded.
Yeah, so these two teams had matched up in the San Diego section title a week prior to this. Came down to the end. Orange Blank cut the lead, but Coronado held on. And even during that game on an intentional foul, at one point the staffs had to be separated and fans were really getting into it. And then when the regional brackets came out, they were put in the same bracket, the 1 and 2 seed. Of course, they each made a run to play each other a week later. So then they're playing Saturday night at Coronado. Orange blends up most of the game. They go to overtime. Coronado's best player fouls out. Then their second best player hits a buzzer beater. They're celebrating. And just in the celebration, it just seemed just a little extra to be going on. The Coronado coaching staff, led by the head coach, was embracing his players, but then pointing and yelling expletives towards the Orange Glen coaches. And it just, without seeing it on video, you don't know, did Orange Glen say something prior? What got him so riled up? But while that's going on, back by the Coronado bench, you see a couple of their players tossing tortillas towards Orange Glen. And you hope that they're not the ones who brought it in. And it sounds like they're not. But at the end of the day, the head coach has to be the responsible one to step up and kind of lead and be the example here. And it was clear that in that situation, he was yelling and doing his own thing, and the rest of the team did not have much order going on. So it made sense. I was a little surprised by how quickly it went down. It was an emergency meeting by Coronado Unified last night, and a unanimous 5-0 vote. And Coronado will be looking for head coach. J.D. LaPerry had been there since 2009, and this was just their first CIF title. So they will look for someone else, and with a lot of their two best seniors graduating, it'll be a completely different looking roster for next year.
Got it. Yeah, thank you for the update. That again was a very unfortunate situation, but thank you for explaining it and breaking it down, Lance. Let's go to you. So, what was the difference in game two between Centennial and Modern Day and girls basketball? It looked like game one, Modern Day won in a thriller, a buzzer beater, incredible game. Why was game two different with Centennial winning?
Well, what's interesting about it is that Coach Martin Woods told me after the game, in terms of their strategy, absolutely nothing. They did not tweak their game plan one bit. And I'm not really surprised, because if you watched the first game in the section finals, the pace favored Centennial. Centennial executed certainly offensively. They had some miscues down the stretch, but to execute at the level they did during a championship game against another unbeaten heavyweight, you can't say they didn't play a great game. And they controlled the pace, and it favored them. They defended Brooke Dimitri at an incredible level, despite being so undersized, not in a pure measurable sense, not equipped to guard a 6'4" wing with a high release. And Trinity San Antonio was the player that checked her the whole game. So the first game, Brooke, of course, scores 28 points. And difficulty of her shots, she was not getting easy shots. There was no flow to Modern Day's. That's a stretch, but she was not getting easy, clean looks. She had to do everything from scratch over multiple defenders. Still, Modern Day went on a late run and pulled it out. So if looking at that, it just made sense that there wasn't any specific tweak for Coach Woods to make. And he still had Trinity face guarding Dimitri the entire game, and they still tried to push the pace, even though Modern Day was able to keep it at a little bit slower pace. And it really didn't look too different in terms of what both teams were trying to do, but it just worked out so much better for Centennial, and they held her to 2 points, which could very well be a career low. And by the end of the game, it wasn't even that close. Like with a little over a minute left, Kevin Kiernan went to, you know, wave the white flag, put in a couple end of bench seniors. So it was weirdly not different at all. And this time it was at Modern Day instead of Centennial. It just worked out better for him.
Thank you. Yeah, it's crazy. The road teams won on both games. You never really would predict that. Awesome. Thank you for that breakdown. Anything else on your mind from over the weekend?
In terms of basketball, not really.
Got it. Yeah, it's finally nice when stuff's winding down and there aren't a million things going on. So I got you. For me, I saw three great baseball championships on Saturday. And in terms of drama, the first one was probably the best in the city section. San Pedro was at home, and they were down against El Camino Real 6-3 in the bottom of the fifth, and then they rallied with a four-run bottom of the fifth to go on and win the game. Mikey Brusselas had a big double, and then Dom Porter hit a two-run home run to give them the lead. And, I mean, just the emotion from those kids was awesome, and hitting a home run to win the game and the championship, that's the stuff that you dream about when you're young, so that was awesome. Just seeing that. And then what was really cool was San Pedro, their pitching wasn't great all day. And then in the final two innings, they brought in their should have been quarterback from the past year, but because LAUSD made kids choose between sports and only play one at a time, his name's Dylan Kordick. He opted to play baseball instead of football. And so it was poetic justice, I thought, that they made him pick. And then he ended up playing baseball and pitching his team to the championship. He allowed, I think, two hits in the final two innings, but no runs. He had a few strikeouts. He struck out El Camino Real hitter to end the game, so that was great. And just great drama. That was a really fun championship to cover. And I love the San Pedro field. It's so pretty, and they really let you get close to the batter's box, and so I got some great photos. I was really happy with that. And then I ventured over to the Southern Section championships at Cal State Fullerton, and I got to see two of those games. I saw Thousand Oaks win against Trabuco Hills 3-2. And those teams are littered with really great prospects. But what was funny was it was a wild pitch that ended up losing the game for Trabuco Hills. And there were a bunch of errors. And it was, I don't want to say it wasn't well played, but on paper, it didn't look very well played because those teams are so good. But a wild pitch ended up costing Trabuco Hills. And then before, miscommunication with the left fielder and the shortstop. But Rock Riccio, the great second baseman for Thousand Oaks, who hit 12 home runs this season, he scored the game-winning run, and he was very happy after the game, obviously, and that was nice to see. I've been following Thousand Oaks for a while. And then in the night game, Harvard-Westlake pitcher Christian Becerra, I've been underrating him drastically all year. He incredibly threw a complete game one-hitter against Jay Serra in their loaded lineup, and Harvard-Westlake won 3-0, and it was a really impressive display. He's a guy who doesn't throw like a 90-mile-per-hour fastball, but he's just so consistent with his slider and fastball. It's a little bit off the 90. He throws it like 87 to 89, but he was doing that the whole game, so still really hard to hit. And then his slider was really good. And he's not afraid of having hitters put the ball in play and having his fielders make plays. So even though he did have seven strikeouts, he wasn't afraid to pitch to these guys, and that's so important. And he just had an amazing game. So that was great to see. But I thought the best game of the day was that San Pedro one, and that was really cool. First time since 1992 a team from outside the San Fernando Valley won the upper division title in the city sections, and it was San Pedro in 1992. That is longer than I've been alive, so that's crazy. I want to end with, before we get to top performers, with some football stuff. I have a couple thoughts. Bodie, quickly, can you give me a minute or two on San Diego football? Cathedral Catholic, I know, is the big team. Anyone else emerging right now as we move to some 7-on-7 and off-season stuff?
Yeah, I think Lincoln will be there with having two really highly recruited cornerbacks in Jaleel Tucker and Jaleel Florence, both guys that are easily power five. So having athleticism, and I know they'll have guys around. I think ultimately it's just when they take on that Cathedral, that St. Augustine, are they going to have the power up front of lock? And then Carlsbad, a team who ended the year really strong. They do lose their quarterback, Ayan Sayan, but the nice thing for them is his younger brother, Julian Sayan, was the backup all year as a freshman. And since the season's ended, with any camp he goes to, he gets an offer from So Georgia, Florida, and Notre Dame. So he definitely looks like, with Tyler Buckner having left, that he's the next guy up that will be the highly recruited one. And his 3 years at Carlsbad definitely looks like they're going to have some top talent to surround with him with, and should be one of the top teams during that time.
Got it. And Lance, I know you've done a lot with Apple Valley. They should be very good again this year. I don't think they'll get into that top eight, but they have a lot of talent.
Exactly. They don't have as much depth or quite as many, you know, four or five star guys as that top eight. But I think outside of that, the sky's the limit for them. What they did this year with Ty Smith opting out, I didn't even realize that until about a few weeks into the season. They had already cleaned up in their league and the Mojave River League. And I think they only allowed 21 points their whole league run. And then, of course, they got that win against Culver City at the end. But that was with Denigal throwing to about six or seven guys every single game and sharing the sugar. Most guys only getting two, three receptions a game. Apple Valley's defense is so underrated. There's a lot of individuals to name, but to start with their linebackers, Gavin Hambrick, Dustin Reynolds, both of them, let's see, in the past 2 months, I think Hambrick has gotten his first three D1 offers or something like that. Reynolds won Defensive Player of the Year for their league. As a sophomore, they have a three-star cornerback, Isaiah Ojeda, and it doesn't end there. They are so deep and well-coached on defense that they will again be formidable, not just on offense, but on defense next year. I personally think it's going to hold up against some of the better teams. They're finally at the point where they can get the so-called down-the-hill Inland Empire teams to schedule games against them, which is very hard for high-desert teams for a number of reasons, a lot of it just being logistical, but some of it being that the high-desert just struggles to put out teams that can really give those teams, the Rancho Cucamongas, the Murrieta Valleys, runs for their money. And that is no longer the case. And shouts out to Rancho and Murrieta Valley for stepping up to the plate and saying, okay, we'll take that shot against the high desert team, knowing that, you know, there's going to be a lot of people talking if they lose and not as many people talking if they win. So I'm going to try to go to at least one of those preseason games next year. Throw in the fact that you have big Raymond Polito anchoring that offensive line, and they have all the goods to be that elite team. Like you said, I think a division two contender, give or take a little bit, being the perfect spot for them. I think they have all the goods to be that team that makes that run and turns heads without even having that many guys who are Power Five prospects per se.
Got it. And we'll see what division they end up in. Remember, no one knows what division they're in until the regular season ends. So they certainly could be in two. They could be in three. We'll see what happens. Awesome. So the reason I wanted to talk football, I'm going to reward the listeners to this podcast. This is not official yet, but it's looking like St. John Bosco is going to open their season at SoFi Stadium against Miami Central from Florida. So, again, don't tweet that out, but I'm expecting that announcement to come from Nike pretty soon. So that'll be a crazy game. And then I wanted to hit on Los Alamitos and Long Beach Poly. Los Alamitos just hired Danny Hernandez as their quarterback coach, who's that great guru from Southern California. He works with Malachi Nelson, and he works with a lot of great quarterbacks. And I don't know if Los Alamitos will have enough to compete with Mater Dei and St. John Bosco, even Servite or even Sierra Canyon, but they are loaded. They got some St. Bernard transfers. They have some other guys who are coming in and wanting to play with Malachi Nelson. We're seeing this at Warren, too, when you have a great quarterback like Warren has Nico Iamalieva, and guys want to come play with him. So we'll see Warren be good. But Los Alamitos is going to be in Division One, I think. I'd be shocked if they weren't. And I think they're going to cause some problems and be – I don't want to say surprise because they were undefeated last year, but they are going to be really, really good. They're loading up, and just watch out for them. And then one other quick thing. This summer, what is Long Beach Poly going to do with quarterback? Darius Curry transferred in from St. Bernard. He is very good. Remember, Nico Iamalieva was at Long Beach Poly. They opted to stick with their starter, Shea Kirkendall, and Nico left and went to Warren, obviously. I wonder if maybe they wish that they had done a platoon to try to keep Nico happy. Are they going to do that with Darius Curry? Because it looks like Long Beach Poly on paper is going to be in that Division I bracket as well. And Shea Kirkendall works really hard, is a very talented quarterback, but you have to manage that position. And if Darius Curry is the Power 5 quarterback that it looks like he is, I'd imagine it would be in their best interest to try to get him on the field in addition to Shea, who's a kid who's done all the right things and worked really hard, because you'd want to keep him around for the next few years. So we'll see what happens there. I think if they do a platoon, it could really work well for them. That'll be interesting to see. We know Centennial's had success with that. St. John Bosco did it a year ago. But that's a big storyline I'm watching, because I think Long Beach Poly, I don't think they'll ever quite be back to where they were in their glory years, but they're getting about as close as possible for a public school. So that'll be something to watch as well. And I wanted to hit on that. There's a big passing tournament at Los Alamitos on Saturday I'm going to check out. So just ahead of that, those are two things I'm looking at. And I think we'll see a lot with those two teams this year. Lance, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, I have a question. So we saw last season that Los Alamitos took a massive, massive step on the defensive side of the ball from the 2019 campaign. They don't have too many big names on that end. I feel like they have individuals who don't get enough credit. Just from what you've seen, I think you only saw them once last season. I didn't get to see them at all. But from what you've seen, well, what's been the key or some of the keys to their success defensively without having guys who just get so much individual recognition?
Yeah, last year their offense was so good that teams would try to pass just to get back into the game before they ended up getting running clocked. So that helped the defense a lot. It's easy to play defense when you don't get confused about what's going to happen. If it's going to be a pass play every time, that makes it a lot easier. So that helped, and then they were able to get to quarterbacks and blitz and cause a lot of trouble. I'm just excited to see what happens when they play really good teams, because you're right, defensively they maybe don't have those big names, but I mean, Makai Lemon goes both ways for them, and he, as a defensive back, might even be better than he is as a receiver. They picked up some St. Bernard's guys. I don't know if Sincere Rainey has checked in there or not. I'm not exactly sure what school he's at, but if he is at Los Alamitos, he's going to be a great star linebacker. So some names will emerge. Sin Brennan, I think his name is, what played on Los Alamitos basketball team as well, and he is a good defensive end. So they'll have some guys emerge, and when we do our preview, we'll be able to talk to the staff and get all the names. But I think what helped them last year was they were, A, just better than everyone else already, even if they didn't have big names, and then, B, they just knew what offenses were going to do because they'd be killing every team they played with the exception of a couple of early games. Exciting times, though, to see what's going to happen. I mean, Max Preps came out with their National 25, and they have Mater Dei ahead of Bosco, which makes sense because Mater Dei won. But Bosco, have you been following the transfers that they've been getting, Lance? They got a couple kids from Alamany, and they're going to be really good. So that'll be tough to pick. But I think on paper they might have more guys, but I don't know. We'll see. I got to do a little bit more scouting before we come out with any of our lists.
Who are the biggest names they've gotten?
They got Jashawn Fausto Ramos from Alamany. They got, who else? Another great defensive back. And then all these kids are getting, they're going on the tours to Ohio State, so they're getting offered by all these great schools. RJ Jones was the other guy's name. So that secondary is going to be amazing. So we'll see. We'll see what they decide to do with quarterback. I think they're kind of locked into their platoon as well, because I don't see them going away from either guy. So it's crazy talking about football with basketball just ending, but I mean, it's been a crazy year, so that's what we're gonna have to deal with. Let's get to top performers quickly. I'll just go first. I have to give it to Christian Becerra for his one hitter in the championship against Jay Serra. Never in a million years did I predict that to happen. What a performance from him, and a really nice kid too. Talking to him after the game, he was so happy. Really seemed like he has a great head on his shoulders. He's going to Cal. Excited to watch his career unfold, because with the command he has on those two pitches, that could really serve him well down the line. Lance, let's go to you. Top performer?
Last night I saw Rosary Academy beat Selma in the state playoffs for softball. And Natalie Romero, so she's pitched most of their season. They were starting Samantha Pagan, who hasn't gotten as many chances but is a great pitcher. And with two outs in the first inning, Pagan gets drilled in the hand by a comebacker. Romero, who has a rare night off, has to come in on zero notice, throw six and a third innings, and gets 12 strikeouts, only allows one run. So that was a impressive on your feet performance. Going back to the previous week, I didn't touch on this last week in our podcast, just because I wanted to see how the final shook out, or the second version of the Centennial versus Modern Day final shook out. But in the first one, Brooke Dimitri, 28 points. I think she was in double digits with rebounds too. That was a legacy game. As far as the high school level goes, that was one of the legacy games of all legacy games I've ever seen. They needed every single point of hers. It's right up there for me with DJ Uyagalele against Modern Day in the finals. 28 points, the defense crawling all over her. She is shooting catch and shoot turnaround jumpers from 23 feet. It goes to overtime, even though Modern Day trailed the entire game, and it was simply force feeding her the ball and her shooting over multiple people every single time. And if she had any less incredible of a night, Modern Day would probably be 0-2 against Centennial. So that was amazing. Jada Curry was very good in that game. Not her A-plus performance, but certainly not a bad performance. 23 points. Not great shooting, but solid. So second game in the section, the regional finals this past week, Jada Curry, she comes out and has her own legacy game. 27 points, got more assists than in the previous game. Really took over in the third quarter. Centennial held an 18-5 lead in the first quarter. Modern Day came storming back, cut it to one. Curry took over, 14 points in the third. Again, finished with 27, and that was also just an absolute legacy game. So shouts out to them.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, that's really interesting to hear. Cool to hear for sure, because anytime someone's at that level, that's awesome. Lance, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I totally forgot. Part of what makes it even more interesting is that they're both in the rare position where they're on a team that can knock off other state contenders even without them scoring in double digits, which happens sometimes. Sometimes they're the decoy and the facilitator. But in those games, they couldn't do that. And it was that's rare air for them that they can't count on the rest of the team putting it away if they score, 10, that they needed 25 plus in those games. And then some. So that just made it even all the more impressive and all the more significant.
Got it. Awesome. Bodie, how about you? Top performers.
Yeah, so I want to recognize a couple teams first. Boys basketball, San Diego had a really good end of the season in the regional playoffs. In 1A, Santa Fe Christian was a team up and down, I think, a little bit in the regular season. They did play some top teams. They just weren't able to get it done, whether it was Torrey Pines. They split their matchups with St. Augustine and then lost the playoff game. But I think they reset coming into this and got a really impressive win first round over Heritage Christian. I thought that was one they would struggle with. And then second round, they went up to Clovis West and won. Clovis missed a game winner at the buzzer to survive that. And their reward was in Chaminade loss. They get a home game against Capistrano Valley in the championship. And I think it was only a 3 or 4 point game at halftime. And Santa Fe Christian came out and won by 27 there. So that was a really good one win for them to grab. And then in 2A, Modern Day Catholic, the team that won D1, really just continued what they've done. They beat Dominguez, they beat Carlsbad, and then they beat Central Fresno in the final. 17 point win, 18 point win, 17 point win. So they really dominated that bracket. In Division 3A, we saw this was the last game, boys basketball game of the year in the state. This was on Monday morning. Bonita Vista come from behind win there over Chalivet. So that was really good to see from them. A couple others lost in the championship. We talked about Coronado beating Orange Glen there. San Ysidro in Division 4AA, they were a team that made it in because San Diego had a couple teams pull out. They were able to replace them, and they made most of it three road games. They beat Arcadia, they beat Chatsworth, and then they beat Linfield Christian in the final. So a good win for them. And then moving down to 5AA, Sage Creek was a team that, when you look at this bracket, it seemed like they should have been either the one seed or maybe in a different bracket, because they won their first round game by 23. Second round game, they beat Atascadero by 23 and then beat Roosevelt in the final by 19. So just another team there that was able to continue their section title, start a new bracket, and
continue their play there. So those were those top performers. And then from an individual standpoint, there were a couple this week. Gisele Garcia from Mater Dei Catholic, been such a great pitcher for them, and really just continued her legacy there in the Open Division Championship game. Threw a no-hitter, struck out 12 against Rancho Buena Vista, and that Rancho Buena Vista lineup heard about all year has some great hitters, so that's a really impressive accomplishment there from her. And then just looking down, Kelsey Tadlock's another one from San Marcos. She threw a shutout in the Division I Softball Championship, and that was a 1-0 win. So when you only are protecting one run there, a little tougher there. So some big softball performances this past weekend.
Awesome. Well, thank you, guys. I'm not exactly sure when we'll get to do this podcast again. With the 4th of July coming up, I'm taking next week off. So we'll get back in the summer at some point. But this will probably be the final one for a little bit. So thank you for listening in. Hopefully you enjoyed it. And we'll see you guys. And you can hear from us in the summer coming down the line. So for Bodie DeSilva, Lance Smith, I'm Connor Morissette. We will see you next time.